This is Whitney, and you're listening to the JCast on Jabberlog.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
What is going on? This is Ricardo with Jabberlog on the JCast, and this is going to be episode number 15 of Within the Trenches. And this is just part of a series of episodes that I'm doing here. I am currently in Boca Raton for the Mini-C conference, and we are right now in the Police Fire Communications Center. And going on today is going to be the active shooter class. But for this interview on this episode, sitting with me today is Sabrina with West Palm Beach Dispatch Operations. How's it going?
Hello. How you doing?
I am doing well. You know, we, my brother and sister came with me over here. And we left, I think we left around 8 o'clock or something. And I didn't realize that it was going to be this far coming over here. It was about a 3 hour drive. And at one point, it just seemed like we were driving and driving, driving. And I looked at my sister who was navigating off of her phone, off her GPS. And she says, my phone froze. And I said, what? I said, do we even know where we're going then? So she's scrambling, you know, to get through it. And I pull up my phone really quick, and we both got it at the same time. And it says, in so and so miles, you're going to be pulling off at exit 109. I said, it's right there. Hurry. So we almost ended up lost.
Well, at least you made it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we got in, and it was around 12:30 when we got here. And I think we went to sleep a little bit after one because we were watching TV. We were trying to fall asleep. And so then we wake up and it's, you know, it's 6 a.m. I don't even know if I actually slept, but I am very happy to be here. It's been great so far. Episode 14, I spoke to Al, and with you today, I want to learn a little bit about you, because that's what Within the Trenches is all about, learning more about dispatchers and anybody really within the emergency services field. So where I want to start really is, how many years are you have you been in dispatch, and how did you get into dispatch?
Well, I'm actually in my 15th year of being what I'm now proud to say is a recognized professional career. As you know or may not know, that it's necessary now for Floridians to have a certification to be a 911 public safety dispatcher.
Really?
So I'm extremely honored about that. And I kind of fell into this by life circumstance, I would say. Mm-hmm. Initially, I was with the Department of Health, and I did about maybe 6 years with them. I was in the WIC and Nutrition Division, which was wonderful. We got to work with the women and their children going through pregnancy and making sure they were healthy and all the components of that. But I realized that there was so much greater in me that I wanted to do. I wanted to continue to work frontline, but I wanted to do it in a more profound way. So I started doing some research, and by chance, I came across an opening at the police department.
Okay.
So I said, why not? And I actually filled it out a lot of different arenas. I did the police department. I did the judicial system. I did a couple of different things to say, I need to find, I even did a stint as a medical assistant. I mean, I was all across the board. I did cosmetology. I did a
bunch
of stuff.
And jack of all trades.
In that time period, I was also writing, which I still do. So I had a couple of pieces of published poetry and everything else. So the gamut, I worked it. But I took the job, went through the whole process, which was to me very interesting of all that you have to do.
Okay.
The background, the voice stress test, the background itself, as far as the interviewing and everything else, it was not common to the public sector. The interviewing process was behavioral based. So it was more about what I had done, including upon what I could possibly do. So I found it all very intriguing. Getting into the job, it was absolutely phenomenal for me. I could deal with people. I could learn about people. But the thing for me that was most sweet about it was that I was now a commodity, meaning I had the skills and ability to save someone's life.
Right.
How many people walking around can say that?
Exactly.
So yeah. That's what it was for me.
Oh, that's awesome. You said your process that you had was a voice stress test?
Yes. It's a lie detector test.
Oh,
it's a
okay.
Fancy terminology for that.
I was like, what is that?
But just thinking in my line of work I'd done previously, mm-hmm. never been exposed to anything like that.
Right.
So, of course, I'm nervous. You've seen all the movies. You've seen all the lines going back and forth on all these high-tech
yeah,
movies and
exactly,
everything. So
yeah.
I'm like, I am in it now. I was just so excited. But, you know, very nice process for me, and I learned quite a bit. So
that's awesome. It makes me wonder if, you know, if the process was that way because it was part of a police department, like where I work, we're separate from the sheriff's department. And, when I did my process, it was the interview and it was a written test, which really was all common sense.
Right.
And actually that was it. Now they've added, a few more things where they do a typing test and I think you have to type 30 or 40 words per minute. And you can only get like two or three mistakes and then, you know, you're out.
Well, I'm telling you, I watched it become a very progressive process.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly feel, and I always do this disclaimer because this is my personal opinion, but this is how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that it was that way because of the police department,
mm-hmm.
but I also feel that it was that way or that involved because of the type of person that you have to be.
Ah.
To work in law enforcement, dispatching in that type of arena, you're held to a much higher standard than
right.
what people would ever realize.
Exactly.
You can't have the illegal background. You
mm-hmm.
can't have all of these things going on in your life. So to accept the commitment is to say, I'm going to have to live by a totally different creed. And that's how I looked at it. And that was fine for me,
mm-hmm.
but it's a conscientious decision that you have to make.
Now, when you got the job, did they give you a phone call or did they email you to say, hey, you got the job? Or... was there a letter or anything?
Actually, Sergeant Ernie George, God bless his heart, he's mm-hmm. retired now, but he personally called me
mm-hmm.
and we had the most warm conversation. We actually laughed during the conversation. He made me feel very comfortable. And a couple of my references that he called told me the same thing, but he made it very personable.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like us to email, you have this. He called me and he explained to me when to be, what to bring, what to do. And it was very rewarding for me to hear from him.
Right.
I'm like, how? I'm talking to a sergeant, you know? I'm like, wow,
yeah.
I'm feeling like big cheese. It was very nice.
When I was told that I got the job, I had gone in for my second interview and I was leaving there and she's my director now. She's at that time, she was just the assistant director. And I said, so when am I going to know if I got the job? And she said, no, nobody told you yet. And I said, well, no, I thought, you know, this is my second interview. I thought I had to go through a second interview. And she says, you're the only one that we chose. You got the job. I said, oh, I was like, that's awesome. And they said, yeah, you know, you had, you know, everything that we were looking for. You had the experience and everything else coming into it. So you're the only one that we chose and you did great on the written.
Yes.
Yeah. And, but I got an email, I remember, a few hours after that interview, I thought, oh, maybe HR forgot to send me the email saying, hey, you got the job. Yeah. But, you know, I still have that email saved in my work email.
Wow.
I have no idea why.
Wow.
I read it. It was, I don't know, about 3 or 4 months ago. I was cleaning out all my emails and I read it over and I thought, oh, that makes me feel good even now.
But you know what? To have that type of understanding that you come to an arena that is so aggressively competitive
mm-hmm.
and that you place top notch and that you are what they were looking for hands down to
right.
me has to resonate for the rest of your career.
Mm-hmm.
I have so been involved in training for a bit and I'm happy to see that they listened. Because what I noticed, especially by attrition, by people coming in and not being able to do the job or stay because of how it affected them
mm-hmm.
or what was required,
right.
is the testing. Now they have the critical testing that tests the skills and abilities, the multifunctional dexterity, the ability to multitask, do everything or several things at once, but proficiently.
Mm-hmm.
Because I explain to people when I'm training, that's not how we're wired. When you're born and you're raised, you're taught to do one thing and do it proficiently.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taught to tie your shoes. get that down, and you're taught to dress, put your color scheme together, get that down. You know, you learn something else, but you don't do all of it at once. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thankfully.
Right. Yeah.
Because I'd have been tripping over myself, and I would have been mixed match. But you know, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, we've had my training coordinator has brought in people that are just starting out. She'll bring them out, and we'll talk to them a little bit. You know, actually, when I started and I was in training, nobody said anything to me. You know, I'd go in and I would be with my trainer and that was it. You know, I only spoke to my trainer and I would try to talk to other people and they would just kind of answer, you know, a little bit and then not say anything.
Right.
Well, I was telling my wife, I don't know if I want to stay doing this because I figured being in the kind of job that I'm going to be doing, we all need to talk to each
Absolutely.
Other. You know, why wouldn't you talk to me and kind of tell me about the job a little
Absolutely.
Bit or something? But then, you know, afterwards, a girl that I work with, who is now the training coordinator, who I actually grew up with and went to school with, she was telling me at that time, we weren't allowed to talk to the trainees. They didn't want us talking to them at all because they really needed to pay attention to what was going on. It's changed drastically now. Now we talk to people, because I don't want somebody coming in who's brand new and thinking, well, none of these people even like me. Why am I going to work? How am I going to trust this person during a call? You know, so I'm glad that it's changed that way.
You know, and it may sound so cliche, but there's a lack of communication. Mm-hmm. And it's a culture. It's inbred that we get it and it's our baby.
Mm-hmm.
We hold it close to our heart. But to me, for it to be the most effective, and honestly and truly, I mean this, is when we empower others that are around us.
Mm-hmm.
When I take you in and I help you understand, that's what I think your mission is so good, for people to start understanding and connect the dots. We're not robots.
Mm-hmm.
We're not planted. We're people with feelings, emotions, and everything else. And I'll never forget the first time I walked in the dispatch center. The equipment blew my mind. I had never
seen like 50
so much
screens
in one place. So that alone, for someone to tell me that this is coordinates with this,
mm-hmm.
and this goes with this, and you don't have to learn it at one time, you
right.
don't have to get it overnight, it would have been hugely instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
So it does my heart well to know that at least the mindset is changing.
Yeah, it's definitely changing. You know, we tell people, you know, this is what you're going to do. You see all these screens, you see the keyboards, the phone and everything. It looks crazy now, but I'm telling you, within a few weeks and doing a few things and memorizing
sense.
The codes, it'll all be secondhand knowledge, you know, and I've seen people like the Citizens Academy, they'll come in while we're working and one of our supervisors is leading them and saying, you know, this person does this, they do this. And their eyes are like this big, you know, staring at what we're doing. But the bad thing, though, is that sometimes there's nothing going on.
So they can't really see.
Right. Yeah. But there have been those times where their eyes are popping out. And we had just toned out for a 2 or 3 vehicle accident, or we've got a domestic going on. And you can hear the person on the other line just screaming. And they're standing there just staring at us. And they see us picking up the phone, answering the radio, typing this in and doing this.
I've watched people do it. I've watched people, because I'm a 55-plus typer,
uh-huh.
and people are just sitting there watching me, and I'm like on the phone here, and I'm like touching the radio over here, and I'm like telling somebody on the floor over here, and I heard that. Da, da, da. I love everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. It's like it's an adrenaline rush that you can't get.
Right.
People understand.
How would you explain taking a 911 call? I've always explained it, and I've mentioned it in other episodes that whenever I take a 911 call, to me, it's always been like getting into a car, slamming on the gas, and letting go of the wheel, because it can be that intense during calls. So how would you explain taking a 911 call?
I would explain taking a 911 call as being a child who's expecting something,
mm-hmm.
but you don't know what you're expecting. It's like waiting for your mom or dad to walk through the door, because my father was like this. My
mm-hmm.
father, when I was young, we played a game of hide and seek. And every time I hid from my father, I was going to go right to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be a laundry basket behind my door. But it was the expectation, because he walked through the whole house. Where's my baby girl? And he looked under here. And, and I'm in the laundry basket.
Yeah,
I'm cracking up. I knew he could hear me, but now I'm cracking up because it was so much fun. But when he find me, he always had something for me.
Right.
So it's like the expectation of something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to come of it? And what am I going to get from it? That's the best way I can explain it.
Oh, that's great. And it definitely fits with people who wonder why we put them on hold. There's this expectation where I'm calling 911. You're going to talk to me. And that, you know, that's going to be it. But I'm taking your 911 call and I tell you, I need to put you on hold so I can page out the paramedics. I'm calling 911. How are you going to put me on hold? I just said I have to call the paramedics. You know, I have to page them out. I'm going to be right back with you. And, you know, and a lot of people, the time, you know, span of a call, they'll say, and I know you probably taken them where people will say, we've been on the line for about 10 to 15 minutes now. Where's the officer? It's only been 2 minutes.
But you know, in their defense, it seems like eons because I've been on the opposite side of the spectrum and where I've had to call for service.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize it seems like a very long period of time, which it's not. I like to use the hospital ER analogy,
mm-hmm.
meaning I go into the ER and I'm having back pain.
Mm-hmm.
Now my pain is my pain and I've arrived and this is my place because I've been on this side of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And you have 10, 11 other people in the ER. You're expecting to be waited on by your arrival time, by the nature of what you have going on. But my pain is significant to me
mm-hmm.
because it's my situation. But in comes a shooting victim. They have multiple gunshot wounds.
Right.
Now, your back pain has not decreased. Your line in place is still your own. But what makes sense of what we take? Of course, hands down, life or death threatening situation. The shooting victim goes,
mm-hmm.
and that's the immediate course of attention. So when I facilitate and I speak to the community, it's not to lessen what you're going through. It's not to decrease what is your ownership of your situation. It is to relate to you that you are of importance,
mm-hmm.
your situation is of an importance, but we have 101 things that you don't realize are going on behind the scenes.
Right.
And that is to help you.
Exactly.
We're still going to get to you. They're still going to see you in the ER, but it just has to work out in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's hopefully, you know, with everything with this show, what my co-host and I are trying to do with this is that people will understand that. You know, they'll understand more of what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
And why we're doing it. You know, understand us a little bit better. And we were talking earlier and you were saying that you are also an instructor. Now, I know that looking in the conference room earlier when I was standing in there and I was talking to Tom, he was saying that you guys had a dispatch academy and that there were some students up there in light blue shirts. Now, this is the second year that it's that it's been going through?
Correct.
How did you get into instructing? And I guess, you know, why did you really want to get into instructing and all?
Well, by design, I believe that some of the most influential people in my path, especially professionally speaking,
mm-hmm.
have been teachers. I'll never forget my English comp teacher in undergrad studies. She was the one that realized that I really had a knack for writing. I was really talented because I was a young girl who was about 6 or 7 who hid in my room and wrote in journals and all of this because I didn't know of any writers. And I mm-hmm. felt like, maybe there's something wrong with me that I want to spill everything that's going out in my head on paper.
Right.
But as I did the composition, the literature, and all the different stuff, she pulled me aside and she said, I don't know whether you realize it or not, but she said, you have such an artful gift at writing and creating, and you need to do something with it. She told me it'll be a travesty to this world
mm-hmm.
if you do not do something with this. And that was so inspirational.
Right.
And then I go to graduate studies and I have this professor. Now I'm thinking at this point, I'm a very proficient writer
mm-hmm.
and I've honed my craft. I've done this and that. And he kept pushing my papers back, where I'm looking at other people and theirs are mediocre. I'm like, what is going on here? So I had to go to him. I had to ask,
mm-hmm.
why me? What is it that's going on with me? He said, you'll never realize. I see what you have here, and I'm trying to push you to the next level.
Mm.
So don't compare yourself to this person.
Right.
I see what you're capable of. So to have had that in my path, I want to be that and give that to someone else. And that's why I facilitate.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So how does the academy work?
the academy works, basically you do the registration and you're accepted. I like that there's no particular rhyme and reason. You just have to have, you meet the basic criteria, mm-hmm. but you just have to have a desire.
Okay.
And the academy itself, it's a 16-week period and they do evening classes from 6 to 10, but they run the full gamut of the introductory portion into the dispatch center to mm-hmm. explain all about it. We do culture, we do diversity, the active shooter, they do the trauma, they do the trauma hawk. I mean, they run the full gamut of what you would encounter, EMS and everything included. So anyone who takes this course, mm-hmm. not only do you have the means to become certified, which will push you in a position to be employable, but you also have the greater insight. There can be no better way for you to determine, especially after doing stints of observation in a dispatch center, whether this is what I truly want to do.
Right.
Instead of going, applying, devoting X amount of months and years of your life and figuring out this is not what I want to do.
Yeah.
It gives you the inside track, which I honestly truly love.
Oh, that's good, because we've had, it's not with this training coordinator now, but the one that we had before, and I don't think that it was her fault in any sense or anything, but we had during that time a section of people that we had. I mean, these were groups of people who were coming in to that we were going to train to work there with us. And a lot of them, you know, split right away. It was that first call that they heard that they had never heard before.
Right.
And they heard it and thought, no, this is not what I want to do. And this is after a few weeks of learning our CAD system, right. learning the map system and everything else. So we put all this time into potential dispatchers and they just decided to split. So,
but you know, clearly being a technical person, uh-huh. I know you get it in a way a lot of people don't. Equipment, technology, and all of this stuff is totally different from people.
Mm-hmm.
We're marrying the two together.
Right.
But some people are just techno oriented. You mm-hmm. sit them down in front of a computer, mic, or whatever case is concerned, and they're at home. And some people over here, they're able to converse, they're able to counsel, and they're able to mentor people. But to connect the two mm-hmm. and have to say, I have a low margin of error, I have to do this, and I have to do this very proficiently, it's extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when the challenge ensues. And I think if we give people the chance to understand, hey, before you go into this or commit yourself to this, take a look inside of it,
yeah.
and see what it's really all about.
Mm-hmm.
I think the attrition will go away. People will not be so jaded about this, because it is. Either you can do this or you can't.
Right.
Either you can be here or you can't.
Yeah, there really is no in between.
There's no in between.
Because we are dealing with life and death situations
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. And there's yeah. no coming back from that. I mean, I'll never forget the child not breathing, the mm-hmm. mother screaming. I mean, I'm thinking, it's me, because I'm stuck. I'm like, if I don't get to this woman and get her through CPR, she mm-hmm. can't help her child.
Right.
And there's no way I can get through it, stuttering and all across the place. I got to get myself together right now.
Exactly.
I have seconds to help her save her child. That is huge, huge in the scheme of things.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's definitely good then for people to be able to listen to things first and get that, you know, as you were saying, to really figure it out first before going in there and having that rude awakening of, this is what you guys really do? I thought you were just, you know, answering calls here and there. No, this is not television.
No, it looks good. I mean, the call with Halle Berry, she's gorgeous. And I mean, all that kind of stuff. But
of course, yeah.
the meat and potatoes and the run of the day, it's not all of that fanfare and flair. It's right. just the nature of what we do.
Yeah, and we don't get to go and chase down no. anybody and, you know, no. scissor kick them or anything
I
like
mean,
that.
I mean, I hate to think I missed my calling. I should have been on Broadway or Hollywood right. or somewhere, you know, just to that degree. I just didn't do it that way. So.
Yeah. And I think it was episode 13, maybe my co-host Whitney and I, we were joking about, you know, that the call, you know, you really don't do things like that. You know, we end up getting, we'll get a letter, you know, a nasty gram or something of, please explain in writing why you did this.
Right.
Or, you know, we can't go to people's houses and take the law into our own hands. We'll get in trouble if we talk
as
to somebody
as
on the
like
phone.
To sometimes.
Yeah.
I would love to knock on somebody's door that I've had an issue, you know, but it's the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. You know what you can and can't do and
right.
you function inside of that. So.
Exactly. Really quick, any of the calls that you've taken, do you remember your first call that you ever took?
I do. It's kind of embarrassing and it's kind of funny.
Okay.
But I was fresh out of training. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was on the floor as a call taker.
Okay.
And I'll never forget 911 and it's a bank robbery. Mm-hmm. And it's in progress. And I'm rocking and rolling. I had a whole list of questions at that time. We had everything spelled out. Mm-hmm. And where's the suspect? And the teller who I actually connected with was really good. Money back here. We have a description here. Any vehicles? I mean, just excellent.
Yes.
For how it played out.
Uh-huh.
But I forgot that banks have this common system, but it's wired to all their locations. So it wasn't the right branch.
Oh, no.
So I have all the cops flying downtown to our local branch.
Uh-huh.
But it was another branch. Thank God someone else in the bank had also called and they had made the
right good.
Connection. So the training coordinator, she was so sweet about it because I was devastated. I actually contemplated quitting that day. And she came over to me and she talked to me and she said, I want you to think about all the things that mm-hmm. you did right. And she said, I know that from this day forward, you'll never forget to verify a location.
Exactly.
And I'm location, location, location.
Yeah, location, cross streets. Yeah.
And never forget. So it was her. And that's why I said about the people who cross your path,
mm-hmm.
because it was the way she handled that with me.
Right.
That allowed me the opportunity to continue on in my career.
Yeah, that's great because me being a supervisor, if somebody, you know, does that, you know, on a call, like, you know, with you did, with, right. you know, with the branch and everything else, there's nothing that, you know, say I was your superior. There's nothing that I could tell you more that would make you feel worse, you know, than you already were. So, yeah.
That's
so, you know,
yes.
a lot of people, you know, I'll take them to the office and I'll say, okay, this is what I'm going to talk to you about. And they already know what I'm going to talk to them about. And I just, you know, kind of go over it with them. And I tell them that too. There's nothing that I can tell you that'll make you feel worse than this. And I'm not going to make you feel worse than this because what is that going to do?
Right.
You know, this, it's going to make you, you know, start second guessing yourself. And I don't want you to second guess yourself at all. You know,
you can't have a timid and scared dispatcher. You just can't have that.
Yeah, exactly. Do you remember any other like more memorable calls or?
Well, October of 2003,
mm-hmm.
God bless the dead. It's one of the officers who's on duty.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a line of duty death.
Okay.
And what I remember so vividly about this particular situation is I actually was not supposed to be on duty that day.
Oh, really?
I had come in to work overtime,
mm-hmm.
and I had taken a radio channel. Always been fond of main radio, and mm-hmm. that's the place I love to be.
Right.
And it was chaotic. It was mayhem. It was so busy. Call after call, situation after situation. And I sit down, and I mean, this is my meat and potatoes. I'm home. I'm rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
I'm pulling units from all over the city. And I'll never forget it. He called me on the main radio channel and he said, hey, I'm here in the station. He said, I'm on my meal break.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, I can hear how busy you are. He said, if you need me to, I'll clear and I'll help you, you know, clear some stuff up and then I'll go ahead and finish my break.
Right.
And I thought about it and I said, well, I really don't want to inconvenience you. And he said, no, I'm going to stop you. He said, you're a wonderful dispatcher. You're doing a great job, but I can help you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, so give me a few minutes. I'm going to go 10-8, go on the road, and I'm going to help you. So he goes 10-8 like he promised me, or in service as mm-hmm. I'm using codes, but that's a dispatcher.
Yeah.
But he goes en route, and he's on his way to a call. I dispatched him to a call in the south end of the city. And about maybe 6 minutes into his travels, the phone starts ringing off the hook. I mean, mm-hmm. the dispatch center goes awry. And on my end of the channel, I'm getting officer down,
right.
All kind of accident calls. I mean, it's all kind of stuff. So in the midst of this, and you'll understand why later, I redirected this officer who I dispatched to the accident with injuries where the officer down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, officer down, everybody in the city goes.
Right.
It's just common sense.
Exactly.
You send out your resources there.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard from him. He never responded. So I'm continuously trying to raise him at this point. In a few minutes, it's understood the reason he's not responding to me is because he's the officer who has been hit.
Mm.
And make a long story short, still kind of very sensitive topic.
Right.
But a woman, it was a traffic fatality, and she came out of the side street and she broadsided him, and his injuries were so severe that he didn't make it. But, you know, I can't get anyone to understand how many times I've revisited that day and said, maybe if I told him no, maybe if I told him that I was okay, and maybe I just tried to work it without him clearing his meal break, because he cleared to help me.
Right.
So I'll carry that with me for the rest of my life. But I've had to process my way through it and say life is inevitable. It's right. Some things are just going to be. So it wasn't by design or plan that I happened to be a part of and it happened to work out this way. This is just the chain of events. But it did not decrease the hurt. Mm-hmm. It did not decrease the pain. Your fellow officer is gone. I mean, the whole agency, the whole city, everybody who heard about it was impacted by it.
Mm-hmm.
But I share my story to help people understand when you sign up for this, you sign up for that.
Right.
So when I signed up to be and stayed on with communications, I signed up for the real possibility that one of my fellow brethren or sisters in this could necessarily not be here because of the job. But it's something I'll always carry with me.
So then, you know, and that's a great, great message. And I guess going into the wrap up of this episode, anybody who's looking to get into dispatch, what kind of message would you give them, especially with that, you know, coming off of what the story that you just told, even having anybody else to deal better with a situation like that, what would you tell them?
I would first tell them that you have to be comfortable within yourself and your ability of what you bring to the table. And you have to accept that life is so, I guess, unexpected and unconditional as to what we encounter. But there can be no greater experience or comforting understanding to know that I am a commodity. To know I possess the skills, ability, and will to do something in this life that many cannot, and that I'm afforded the opportunity on a daily basis to impact life in a positive and meaningful way. That's what I look at as my job. That's what I take with me. And that is what is so very significant. So if you sign up for this, don't look at the money. Don't look at the benefits. Don't look at the side perks of what you think might be. Take to heart that the people in your community or whoever you may come in contact with, or they're relying on you life or death. And let that be your focal point. Not to say I have to go in and always have to, oh my God, can't make a mistake, this and that, but just say every day, and I do this, that I walk inside that dispatch center, you have the best that I can possibly give you. And I'm at peace with that.
That's great. That's an excellent message. And I want to thank you very much, Sabrina,
for
joining me on episode 15. And this is going to be the wrap up. We are going to be here for a few more episodes at this Mini-C conference of Boca Raton, Florida. And you can send any questions, suggestions, anything to the JCast at jabberlog.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Jabberlog. And all of these episodes will be posted either later on today or within the next couple of days, because I'm going to have a lot of editing. Yeah. Yeah. Everything will be posted up at thejabberlog.com. Thank you very much once again.
Thank you.
You just listened to Within the Trenches on the JCast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to thejcast@thejabberlog.com.